Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Ramadan is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, which began on the night of February 17th. Muslims across the U.S. will be celebrating and observing the month through fasting, abstaining from food and drink from sunrise to sunset, night prayers, and gathering with their local community. The Columbus Muslim community has their own traditions and practices, and joining us now is Ohio State Representative Munira Abdullahi, the first Muslim woman legislator representing Ohio, and she represents the northeast side of Columbus. Welcome back to All Sides, Munira.
Thank you for having me.
So, happy Ramadan.
Happy Ramadan. Thank you.
Tell me what Ramadan means to you. When you think about the significance, what does it mean to you?
I think what it means to me and many other Muslims that celebrate it is it's a month of disrupting your schedule, and it's a month of not only are you abstaining from food and drink, but really you're meant to reflect on this time of where you're no longer taking, you know, lunch breaks, but you're meditating, right? Mm-hmm. You're thinking, you're very thirsty, and you're thinking about how many people in the world feel like this every single day, mm-hmm. where I have immediate access to water. If I wanted to, I could drink water right now, but I'm choosing not to. But how many people don't have that choice? So it's a month of reflection. It's a month of prayer. It's a month of kind of thinking beyond yourself and thinking of community and also being in community. It really is truly a month of community. Everyone is together every single day.
Okay. So what are some of the main practices? We'll talk about fasting in a moment, but besides fasting, what are some other main practices? Like where are you in community?
Yeah, well, breaking the fast. So the iftar, which means breaking fast, that is a big communal meal you have with family. There's a lot of iftar parties. Like I had one, there was one last night. I have one tonight for my stay house iftar. My annual stay house iftar. And then after iftar, you break your fast, most people go to the mosque and they do night prayers. Mm. So it's also a month of disrupting your sleep schedule. Mm. You will be at the, mosque really late. And some people, especially towards the end of Ramadan, will stay up all night till the morning prayers, where you'll have the night spent in reflection, waiting for your pre-fast meal. Most people stay up and they don't all stay up, but some people stay up and eat before the fast starts. You're encouraged to wake up at least before the fast starts and eat something. But it's spent in prayer with community. So you'll see people at the mosque and you'll see people at cafes. Mm-hmm. If you drive by like one of these Yemeni cafes, you'll find it very packed at like 2 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It's incredible.
For a whole month, like every night too?
Every night. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was at a cafe last night and it was like wall to wall.
So this disrupting of the sleep schedule. So I'm learning a lot about Ramadan through preparing for this show, and I've heard of iftar, which is the fast of breaking the meal after sunset. Mm-hmm. But the other one, which is it sahur?
Sahur, yeah.
Sahur, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the meal you have before sunrise. This, yeah, I didn't know about. So is it like you set an alarm and you wake up before sunrise?
Yes.
Is
that, okay. Yes, you set an alarm, you wake up before sunrise. Most of the time your parents drag you awake. I usually sleep through it.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm, you know, they say that'll catch up to you at some point, but I just go straight into the fast. But you should wake up before. That's a tradition. That is a sunnah to wake up before, maybe like 30 minutes to an hour before morning prayers, mm-hmm. and to drink some water, have some dates, you know, have something that will keep your blood sugar, you know, steady, and prepare for the day.
Mm, okay. So do you disrupt your sleep schedule? Do you stay up all night sometimes?
Yes, sometimes. Especially the last 10 days are supposed to be meant for extended prayers, and there is morning prayers on the last 10 nights, earlier than the actual morning prayers. So those prayers start at 3 a.m. They're optional, of course, but a lot of people stay up for those and just continue the night as is until 6 a.m. Then you go to sleep. Take a little nap if you can.
If your life allows for
if
that.
If your life allows for that, exactly.
I see.
It's hard for people who have a 9-to-5.
A 9-to-5 job. Yeah, that doesn't work out. Okay. Now, this idea of the fast breaking meal after sunset, the time that this takes place can differ for people across cities, even if they're in the same time zone. Can you explain how do you know what time you're supposed to do this?
It is based off of when the sun sets or right before the sun sets. So it's from dusk till dawn. And a lot of people nowadays, like before, you'd have to you know, look outside and see when the sun is setting. It's at a certain point. That's when you break your fast. But now we have apps. Like everyone has an app.
So there's a Ramadan app.
There's a prayer times app. So it's the dusk prayer, which is called Maghrib. That is when you break your fast. And so it's a prayer that happens every day. Mm-hmm. So everyone generally has that app anyways. It's called the Adhan app, the prayer app. Mm-hmm. There's different names for different apps that exist that people use, but that app will tell you all the prayer times. And so that that evening prayer, the sunset mm-hmm. prayer, is the prayer that you break your fast.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And so the time, I guess throughout the month, the time shifts by a few minutes, right? Because, yeah. you know, because the world turns,
yes.
right?
And it's really nice that it's cold. Like, it's winter right now, so it's a little bit earlier. The fast is shorter. Mm. But soon it'll kind of jump a bit and you'll have an extra hour of fasting.
Yeah, that was when, because of the time change. Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
So in a week or so, people are going to be.
Okay, with the spring ahead situation. Mm-hmm. Okay. But does when Ramadan hits in the year, does it move, like the dates?
It does move. It does move. So I remember at one point, Ramadan used to be in December when I was a kid. It's mm-hmm. based off of the lunar calendar. That's why. Mm-hmm. And the lunar calendar shifts back about 2 weeks, maybe a week and a half every year. Mm-hmm. So next year, Ramadan will start the beginning of February instead of the middle of February.
Okay.
And then it'll keep going back a little bit.
Do you have a favorite time of year when you wish it always was? Or do you not mind that it moves?
I do miss when it was warm.
Okay.
Like just two Ramadans ago, it was warmer outside. You could run around and do things. But I know some people enjoy the winter Ramadans because it's shorter. So the fast is a lot shorter and easier.
Okay. I get it. I as someone who grew up Catholic, I always was confused as to why Easter moves all the time. So mm-hmm. I guess, but you know, Ramadan moves as well.
Yeah. And this is the first time where Ramadan, Lent, the Lunar New Year, were the same day. Started the same day.
Wow. Lent started on the same day
of
Ramadan.
Ash Wednesday was the same day as the first day of Ramadan.
All right. And then the end of the end of the month is a celebration called Eid. Mm-hmm. So when does that happen this year?
Yep. Eid is it is based off of the moon sighting. So it's a bit more traditional where people have to actually sight the moon, the new moon. And this year it is estimated to be on March 20th or the 21st based off of when the moon is sighted.
Okay, tell me what that means, the moon being sighted. I don't know what that means.
Yes, so it's traditionally, Ramadan starts when the new moon is sighted. Mm-hmm. And so it's a tradition where you have a couple of experts, usually scholars, that go out. They, you know, you know estimated that this month is ending, the mm-hmm. month before Ramadan is ending, within the 30 days that it started. But it's a very solid tradition to go out and actually sight the moon. So they'll have people actually looking for the new moon. And when the new moon is sighted, usually it's sighted in Saudi Arabia has an earlier time than us. So they'll sight it first.
Okay.
Or in that region, the Middle East. And they will call Ramadan. Like Ramadan is starting on this day. And the scholars will agree. Yes, you know, it's a solid moon sighting. There's a formula. I don't know. I'm not an expert.
So when it's on my calendar, like that's not necessarily even when it starts?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's why it gets a little confusing. So people just wait. That's why everyone texts their parents usually, like, hey, did it start yet?
Okay.
But there's a whole formula. I'm not an expert on it, but scholars have a formula of when the month actually starts. And usually they call that and mosque will tell you.
I'm about to ask a dumb question. Like, if it's cloudy, like, does that, and you can't see the moon?
Does affect it. I'm sure there's contingencies. I just don't know it.
Okay. I'm like, I don't understand the sighting of the moon, but all right, we'll get there. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Ramadan with State Representative Munira Abdullahi. As the only Muslim woman in the State House, what has your experience been like educating others in the State House about Ramadan, about your religious identity?
I enjoy it. I think, you know, some people might get frustrated with different, like a lot of questions, but I truly enjoy it. I think it's an opportunity for me to share my traditions and my culture to people who've never experienced it before. And I take every opportunity that I can. I was fortunate enough to host the first State House Iftar. Mm-hmm. And tonight is actually the fourth annual. I can't believe it's been so long.
So you've done three others. Okay.
Yeah. So since my first year, I started it. And mm-hmm. then this is the fourth one. And so I invite my colleagues to that and different people in the community. And they're able to kind of enjoy the Ramadan festivities with us. And it's a joy. On Eid once, I did a floor speech about what Eid was. And I had some of my colleagues come up to me and go, oh my God, it's like Christmas.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of like building that understanding and solidarity is really important. Because that's, you know, that's how you break barriers and build stronger connections with people.
Do you have a like a catered meal plan for tonight then?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're doing halal meals. It's going to be really good.
So do lawmakers ask you questions? Do I'm sure maybe not everyone, but do they want to learn more about Ramadan?
Yeah, I was having like a whole thing with my colleagues last week and, you know, the same questions come up and I don't mind answering them. Mm-hmm. I think the funniest one is always not even water. That mm-hmm. always comes up.
Yes.
They certainly asked that again last week. I'm like, yes, not even water, guys. But they ask questions, and I am honored when they're curious, and I love that they feel comfortable enough to ask questions.
Besides the lawmakers, I mean, what would you say to people listening right now about being mindful during this month when interacting with Muslim peers, coworkers? Is there any advice you have?
Yeah, just understanding that your colleagues and friends are probably really tired due to the long hours and also the fact that they haven't had food or sustenance. So give grace to your employees, your colleagues during this time. And, you know, the most important accommodations is making sure that you know, when they're taking time to pray, understanding they have to take that break. Mm-hmm. There are some people who have to work during the break fast hours to give them that time. There was a school that I had to write a letter for, which was a little sad, where they weren't letting the students go and break their fast. So I had to write a letter mm-hmm. to like tell the school like they have to break their fast at 6 o'clock. It's, you know.
They were still in school at 6, or you mean it was
yeah,
at after school?
It was
school?
A college, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they had like security. They had concerns about like testing and hours and things like that. So, mm-hmm. But having that like compassion and understanding mm-hmm. And grace goes a long way for this month.
In 2022, Hilliard became the first school district in Ohio to close schools on Eid to mark it as a school holiday, and they continue to do so. Do you think that that'll become more common in the future?
Yeah, it would be nice, especially for school districts that have a lot of Muslim students. Like, if they don't have any, you know, doesn't make sense. But if they do, I think it's really beautiful. Every kid wants to feel recognized and seen. Mm-hmm. And so when you see everyone else is getting holidays off and your holiday is not, and you have to miss school. I remember when I was younger, I felt really bad about missing school. Like, I'm going to miss, important things that are happening in mm-hmm. class. I was a nerd. I was like, I'm going to miss, you know.
You didn't like to miss school. I understand.
School. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to have that day just completely off and also just recognize. I think it's really nice for students. It feels very powerful.
Is this probably an individual school district decision, or is there a way, I mean, you're a state representative. Is there a way to have an Islamic holiday recognized at the state level?
Yeah, I just don't know. I just don't know if it'll happen soon in Ohio, knowing the way things are going. But there is a bill, a bipartisan bill. I think Rep. Muhammad is working on it to give, it's called Red Days, like Religious Exemption Days, mm. where students and faculty can request days off at the beginning of the year for religious holidays. So they could.
So it won't count as like a day off. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they won't. But it won't count as a day off. But it's not like the school is closing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know when we'll be able to officially recognize it and have the day off for everyone.
So you grew up going to Columbus City Schools, right?
Yeah.
And I my students are in Columbus City Schools too. I know they don't have Eid off. Mm-hmm. So is that something, I don't know the Muslim population in Columbus City Schools, but is that something that you wish they'd consider?
Substantial. I think Columbus City Schools should definitely consider. And we've had the conversations before. We just need to continue it and mm-hmm. build on it and actually make it happen, because there is a lot of Muslim students that go to Columbus City Schools, and it would be really nice for Columbus City Schools to follow the example of Hilliard mm-hmm. and to have that day off for students and teachers who celebrate.
The school that my husband teaches at, they have some Muslim students, and during lunch, instead of having the students sit in the cafeteria with their peers and having to like watch them eat, I guess, the students go to the library and just like help the librarian, you know, shelve books and hang out there and work on projects. Mm-hmm. Do you have that? Do you have experience like that, or did you have to sit in the cafeteria?
No, I got to hang out in the library. That was really nice. And, you know, we don't have to be around the food and all of that. You keep yourself a little busy. So I love that experience, and I hope other kids are able to have that. I don't know what other schools do. Like, I really have to ask my sister. I don't know what she does in her school.
Yeah.
But I do love when schools accommodate that way and they're able to make the kids feel more comfortable and busy in that time.
What do you remember most about your experience celebrating Ramadan as a child versus now as an adult?
I definitely remember trying to do everything the adults do, like staying up really late. My parents are like, no. but I do remember it being very enjoyable because it was like the one time of the month where you get to see everyone. It's almost like a party every night. Your cousins come over. You go over to their house. And it was just a really fun time. I remember it very fondly as a time where you get to see everyone that you don't see throughout the year.
Mm. And now as an adult, I mean, just anecdotally, I feel like the Muslim population in Columbus has grown a lot. I don't have any numbers off the top of my head to back me up. But do you feel like there's more of a shared experience, more people know about it now than maybe, you know, even 20 years ago?
I believe so. I think there's a lot more understanding, and I see a lot more happy Ramadan posts from organizations and people who are not Muslim. And it's really beautiful to see. And there's folks who show up to Ramadan events more. I did a iftar at Otterbein on Friday. I spoke there, and it was mostly non-Muslims. I was like, this is so shocking and beautiful.
Wow. Okay.
And they were so curious and eager to learn. I thought that was amazing. And I think there is a lot more shared experience, and people are more open and welcoming to one another. Maybe it's the age of social media. I don't know. And we have a festival actually that we started 3 years ago, a Ramadan night market. Mm. And it's supposed to coincide with the Suhoor time and have like a food festival. Somebody started, I think, in Michigan. I don't know. But that festival has grown. Last year, we had 3,000 people there. And it's like,
where is this?
It's in my district. It was in my district last 2 years, near on Morris Road. This year, we'll be moving it a little bit further down to kind of the Worthington area, because we need an indoor space now because it's cold.
Oh, I see.
But it was outdoors last year and last 2 years. And we'll have 50, you know, food vendors, clothing, and it's open till 2 a.m.
Okay, so they open basically at sunset and stay open through the night.
Yeah, and so people can shop and eat and connect and support local businesses. And so even at that event, I see so many non-Muslims there celebrating and enjoying.
Yeah.
And so there is a lot more of a connection, I think, with people.
What is that event called? Say it again.
It's some people call it Suhoor Fest. Mm-hmm. Our personal one is called the Ramadan Night Market.
Ramadan Night Market. Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for telling me about Ramadan and your experience. We've been talking with Ohio State Representative Munira Abdullahi, the first Muslim woman legislator in Ohio, and she represents the northeast side of Columbus. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk with the executive director of the Noor Islamic Cultural Center. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Ramadan is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, which began on the night of February 17th. Muslims across the United States will be celebrating and observing the month through fasting, night prayers, and gathering with their local community. One local mosque in Columbus, the Noor Islamic Cultural Center, has extensive programs and plans for the month. And joining us now is the executive director, Muhammad Azhar Masood is joining us now. Welcome to All Sides, Azhar.
Good morning, Erin. You said my name perfectly correct.
I'm so sorry. Yes,
you're
I got it.
You got it right.
All right. I'll get there eventually. And okay, so can you tell me what programs do mosques host during Ramadan? Tell me about the programs that you have going on this month.
Sure. Just one correction, please. The Ramadan started on the 18th of March. Oh, sorry, 18th of February.
Okay.
Instead of 8th February. I think I heard 8th there. So it's 18th of February, the Ramadan started.
Okay.
That's that connection is done. I mean, we have many programs going on at Noor Islamic Cultural Center, and foremost, the far most important one is the 5 daily prayers, which are already happening during the throughout the year, and the Friday prayers in the afternoon. But the additional prayer which happens in the nighttime, those are extended prayers which happens, which starts around nowadays around 7:30, 7:35. And it goes for almost for 2.5 hours.
And so, yeah, tell me what the night prayers signify. So what, tell me about the importance of them and what they mean to the people who come to your mosque for the night prayers.
So it serves two, three important lessons for us. One is like we have been not eating from sunrise to sunset, keeping ourselves empty stomach and in, obviously from the commandment of God. So when our focus has been to be praying towards God. So then in the nighttime, we are focusing now and reading the message of Quran. So we read the Quran from cover to cover in the last prayer of the night for the next 30 days. So it gives an opportunity to listen to the message of Quran. And then people who know Arabic, wonderful. Who don't, they are able to read it through the translation in whatever language they understand that. So it gives an opportunity for one to revive their faith, so to speak, because throughout the year, you're busy running around. So this is the month. It's a blessing from God to us to revisit the religion and to understand your connection with God and to the community at large.
And surrounding your mosque currently, there are parking signs, there's shuttles for people who can't find parking. Is Ramadan a time when the mosque gets significantly busier than it is in other parts of the year?
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does get significantly busy. So what happens is people are coming and going. And obviously, as you know, the neighborhood, there is limited spaces. So we have extra spaces available in our new facility down the road. So what we have done is, for the convenience of the neighborhood and the people, they could park the car in the new building and the shuttles are running free from them. So about 45 minutes before the start of the night prayer till the end of the night prayer, we run shuttle every 15 minutes from that building to NICC, and then from here back to the building. So that really alleviates the pressure in the neighborhood.
With so many people in and out of the mosque and the neighborhood surrounding it, do you have to worry about any increased security measures as well?
So yes, we have our own security team, volunteers working on it. But on top of that, we do get the services of special duty officers from Hilliard Police. And also from the, if the Hilliard Police special duty officers are not available, they send us Franklin County Sheriff Office. So they come every night and assist us with managing the traffic. And then on the weekends, we get extra officers. And then also the 30 days are very significant for a Muslim. But then within this 30 days, the last 10 nights are more significant. So there we get an extra officers for that, because then people get, first 20 days, you're gearing up, you're getting ready, and things like that, right? The last 10 nights, the Ramadan is finishing. So God has given us the opportunity to practice more, to learn more, to get more devoted towards the religion and praying more. So last 10 nights gets more significant. So we do get extra security for that purpose also. Be safe, kind of thing.
Yeah. Have your security needs changed in recent years? Have you found need for more security? Or can you tell me about that in recent years?
I mean, the need has changed primarily because of the traffic. The more people are coming in, so we have to manage the traffic within the parking lot of the mosque, because we cannot do outside the mosque. So that's one thing. Another thing is, since more people are coming in, so you just want to make sure there's orderly way of people coming in, going out, and no untoward incident happening there. And obviously, safety is another concern. There's so many things happening around the campus, or NICC campus, and in Hilliard or whatnot. So we are just careful just to keep an eye on any untoward incident, so to speak.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about Ramadan with Noor Islamic Cultural Center Executive Director Esher Masood. So there are a lot of other locations that also host night prayers around Columbus. You're not the only one. Has that helped the crowd at your mosque? Do people kind of have people spread out, or are you guys still the most popular one?
I mean, it has helped, but then, as you said, we are the most popular one. Mm-hmm. So people still like to come to the center because the prayer is significant. It's in itself there, but then there's so many other programs happening. You know, we're happening interfaith iftar. We break our fast at sunset time. So we have two and three significant events. So like yesterday, we had a new Muslim iftar yesterday. So we are coming up, we'll be having an interfaith iftar where we invite our interfaith friends to share the blessings of God and then discuss the opportunities we have to work together. So we'll be having that also, right? Then we have a Noor clinic, our very famous free clinic for everybody. So they will be having an iftar also. So there's so much activities happening around campus time. So that's why, being well, the central mosque in Dublin Hillier area, mm-hmm. so people still prefer to come over here. Then of course, if there is no space available, they spread out to the other mosques or places where prayers are happening. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that you have a lot of crowds for those last 10 nights of the month that you talked about, even more so than right now at the beginning?
We sure do. The night, mm-hmm. the last 10 nights gets more busier.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what is the clinic that you just mentioned? You said it was very popular. Tell me about that.
So what we have is called Noor. Let me just get you the exact name. It's a Noor clinic, mm-hmm. where we have physicians. They're providing their services free of charge to people who have no insurance, mm-hmm. or they're having a challenging time. So it runs throughout the year at the OSU campus side. So they have... Also, the Noor clinic, it's on OSU campus. It's called Noor Community Clinic. So that's a medical clinic where people can go who has no insurance or who having challenging times financially. They can go and take themselves out and find out is there something wrong, and they could assist with that.
And have you found recently with the increase in discussions of ICE activity around the country and just the increased focus on especially the Somali community here in Columbus, have people talked to you about whether they're feeling comfortable coming to the Noor Islamic Center for these events? Do they feel like they can come and gather without having to worry?
I mean, to be very honest, we have been blessed. At our center, people are, yes, they are aware of the ICE activities around town and things like that, but they are, I've not heard any untoward incidents so far, thank God, around the center. But having said that, we are obviously being aware of that, and we are assuring people what to do and what to take care of if something that happens over here.
Charity and gratefulness are also major aspects of the month. How does your mosque incorporate that into the month? How do you talk with people about charity and gratefulness?
So I think charity and gratefulness both goes both hand in hand. So if I'm giving charity, with the intention in my mind or with the concept in my mind that I'm being thankful to God what He has given us. That's why I'm giving charity of what God has given it to me, the blessings, right? If I do not feel that, I will not be feeling to give charity. So what does Noor do every month throughout the year, first Saturday of the month? So we have a Noor pantry, so we give out food baskets to the challenged people. But in the month of Ramadan, we run two of these food drives. So one of them already happened earlier this month, and another one is going to happen on March 14th, inshallah. So where people just come in the cars, of course, no question asked. And then we provide them different food items, and we just load the cars and things like that. So that's what we do, two food drives. So like in last month, we ended up serving, thank God, about 350 plus families.
Mm. Okay, 350, then, yeah.
Yes, and then we're expecting around the same, if not more, in the following month. And then we people, so we have, so in the month of Ramadan, we have a compulsory charity, and then we have other, and then obviously people get more into giving more for the needy people, right? So we have a program where a person can fill out an application form. Then we have a committee. They review that application, and based upon the requirement, they either help bring with their rent or with the utility bills or things like that kind of thing.
Tell me about how Noor is preparing for Eid. So that's the celebration that signifies the end of the month, the end of Ramadan. How do you prepare, and what is Eid going to look like at your center?
All right. So that's another great, great event in the life of a Muslim, because you have fasted all 30 days. Now you want to celebrate. So God has given us the Eid al-Fitr right after the month of Ramadan. For the month of fasting, we celebrate. So we go out in a central place to offer prayers. Then we have meet and greets as open houses among people. What Noor does is, as you already know, that space is limited. And if we start doing the prayers at the center, it will go like whole day, because there's so many people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what we do every year, we either rent a hall at Greater Columbus Convention Center or at the Ohio Expo Center. So this year, our Eid al-Fitr will be at Greater Columbus Convention Center. If I'm correct, it's Hall A.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, how many hundreds, are we talking thousands? How many people are you going to have there?
We are talking thousands.
Yeah.
Yes. We are expecting anywhere from 8 to 10,000. This is my conservative estimate. People join us for the prayers. And then, everybody join the prayers. I think the prayers, it starts like 8:30, and the sermon itself starts at 9 o'clock after the prayer.
Okay.
So obviously we're getting ready for that because we have, I think the Greater Columbus Convention Center has gotten used to our needs also at the same time, because we have been there for a while now. Every year we are doing our Eid prayers over there. So obviously we try to get some balloons for our kids or face painting stuff so kids can get the feel of the Eid over here.
And then is it just an all-night party? I was talking with Munira Abdullahi in the last part of the show, and she said that a lot of people stay up all night. Is that what you do too?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so what happens is, so what we do is, so individual people, they have open houses at their homes. So people go out and meet and greet there. And what NICC do, we try to make a social event in the coming days after the Eid, because Eid is on March 20th, which is a Friday. So probably a weekend after, something like that, we will have a grand celebration. We might like rent out, those bouncing games and things like that. So that's what we do. So, and it's primarily for the family to come and enjoy, so kids could have that feeling. So that's what we're planning to do, hopefully soon, right after the Eid.
How do you feel that Columbus's Muslim population has grown? I mean, I don't have any numbers in front of me right now, but can you talk about how Noor has grown over the years in addition to Columbus's Muslim population? It's grown so big to have upwards of 10,000 people at your event.
You know what? I mean, even if I go before Noor, 1987, that's the year I came to as a student at Ohio State. Mm. We used to have only hardly 500 people for the Eid prayers. And now look at it, like 1987, 88, 500 people if we get lucky. And now I move back again around 2014. So I see significant jump of people coming in. Before, we were able to do like two prayers maybe at Noor Center in 2014 or 15. Now we cannot do it. So it has significantly increased. So that's why we have to do a prayer in a bigger place. And then this is what we had, here, interesting thing is the when we talk about 8,000-10,000 people, they are the people who are primarily coming who attends Noor Mosque every year. But then there are people around town when they get to here, there's a big Eid prayers happening in downtown. So they also join in their prayers in the morning also. So there's a huge influx of people in Columbus, and significantly post-COVID, the number has increased really fast.
Well, I want to thank you so much for telling us all about it. We've been talking about how Muslims in Central Ohio celebrate Ramadan with the executive director of the Noor Islamic Cultural Center, Mohammed Asher Masood. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. And I just want to add with one thing that as part of our fasting, every Friday night, Saturday night is open for public. We do offer free opening of the fast. So if you just want to experience how it is, please do come. It's every Friday night, Saturday night at Noor Islamic Cultural Center. Noor Islamic Cultural Center. You guys are more than welcome to join us, please.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy. Really nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you, too. Yes. And coming up, we're going to talk with the executive director of Muslim Family Services of Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Ramadan is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, which began on the night of February 17th. Muslims across the United States will be observing the month not only through fasting and worship, but also charity and service. The Muslim Family Services of Ohio have been providing support and programs for Muslims across Central Ohio for the past 30 years. During Ramadan, the organization hosts seasonal programs to provide meals. And joining us now is the executive director, Nicole Ghazi. Welcome to All Sides, Nicole.
Hi, thank you for having us here today.
So Muslim Family Services of Ohio's mission is to empower families to achieve economic, social, and emotional stability. Tell me some of the ways that you accomplish that.
Sure. So we are in our 33rd year of working here in Central Ohio. We are providing direct social services. We do case management. We do workforce development. We help in resettlement. So if a family, whether they're coming out of homeless shelter, if they're just moving into our community, if they are an asylee or refugee, we are an agency that partners with others as well. But our goal really is to get a family kind of back on their feet and, fully enmeshed in making their new home here in Central Ohio, right? Mm-hmm. And so the work we do often is around employment options, getting people back to work. It is providing basic needs support when somebody hits a crisis and there is either an eviction in process, utilities have been shut off, there's no food in the home. We have resources to basically take care of all of those types of issues. And of course, we do other seasonal type programs. Ramadan is a big season for us, and we have English classes for women. We do early literacy for preschool age kids. We have a wide range of programs that are designed to really get a family settled, get them beyond a crisis, and also to just kind of get them to the point of thriving, you know, here in our community and contributing the way they would like to be.
And your services, your Muslim Family Services of Ohio. So are you working mostly in Central Ohio or all around the state?
We are only in Central Ohio, some of the contiguous counties to Franklin. Mm. But our mission really is that everything that we do is in an area where we are able to meet and walk with our clients locally.
And you said you've been around for 33 years. We were just talking in the last segment, the executive director of the Noor Islamic Cultural Center said that when he would have a celebration in the 80s when he first came here, there would be like maybe 500 people at a big one. And now he's talking about hosting 10,000 people at the convention center. So can you talk about the growth of the Muslim community in Central Ohio?
Sure. So I have I have been involved with this agency almost from its beginning. Mm-hmm. I've been in the community for almost 30 years here locally. It is really a rapidly growing. I can remember a time when the community was a little more transient. People would come in, go to school at the university, mm-hmm. work in IT jobs, move back out. And I would say that we have been beneficiaries of the strength of the Columbus economy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that welcomes talent, and that also welcomes a refugee resettlement. Mm-hmm. And so we see a little bit of both. We have a lot of professionals that come in here and work and fill jobs in a variety of venues. And it's really a very family-friendly area, I believe. Mm-hmm. Columbus is in general. So I think a lot of people really do enjoy settling here. Cost of living had been for a long time pretty reasonable. Mm-hmm. So I think you see some natural growth because of that. And then we also were home to several resettlement agencies mm-hmm. that have brought in refugees, some of whom are Muslim. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a growth there. And then as they've settled and put down roots, not only have their own families grown, but they've also brought relatives in, or somebody moves to kind of build those extended families again, like mm-hmm. they had back home. And so we see some growth in that avenue as well. And it has been really exponential. I have them on a map, and I am very familiar. I've done a lot of work with Noor. They are good partners of ours. I believe the last time I saw a map out of mosques, we were over probably almost 30 mosques in central mm-hmm. Ohio.
Yeah, I found that number too, but that was just just a search. You know, you can't always trust it.
Yeah.
How do you support Muslim families in the area during Ramadan? Is there different things that you offer during this time of year?
Yeah, of course, our regular work does continue. Like mm-hmm. being a social service agency, it is year round, but Ramadan itself is more than just fasting, not eating, and not drinking. Mm-hmm. It is really a time where we kind of forego a lot of material comforts and a lot of our habits and a lot of things that we use to fill our time. And I always say we empty our stomachs to open our hearts. And it's at this time where we really are taught, and we really should be taking the time to kind of do an annual reset our spirituality. We kind of reset your faith, you reset your goals. And part of that is resetting your connection to community. And so that's where a lot of our services during Ramadan come in. We basically are obligated to help those that are in need. Religiously, just like any group of faith is, we have a specific religious obligation that's spelled out to us. And so in Ramadan, while we are working on ourselves and on our faith, it is incumbent upon us to think about those that need us. So our work speaks to that. In Ramadan, we use that time in our office, we kind of recommit to the community. We do have several big seasonal programs that go. We do Ramadan food boxes. Our goal with those food boxes is that we provide ethnically preferred items that families really need to prepare their own meals. Mm-hmm. And we find that we have so many different ethnicities, and I love talking to the women about the different things that they cook, but there's nothing that they love more than showing love to their children, to their grandchildren, to their neighbors by cooking the foods that they grew up eating. Mm. So we pack our food boxes full of staples that sometimes are hard to find in a regular standard food pantry. We always have halal meat, you know, on hand, and in addition to those cooking staples that families need. And we've moved about 3 tons of food out of our office already, and we'll be doing a couple of more significant deliveries over the next couple weekends. And then we also have clients that come in and pick up food when they need it. Food insecurity, I don't have to tell probably your audience that, you know, food insecurity is a real thing. Mm-hmm. You go to the grocery, you see how much things cost. It's very real for a lot of families. And we do want to make sure not only year round, but that especially in Ramadan, that they have what they need to kind of make a modest meal for their loved ones.
Well, not only that, but some of these specialty items, I'm sure, cost even more, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are looking for a particular type of maybe like dates or something like that, they are more expensive. But if you want to have them to celebrate Ramadan, then does your group help people find them?
Well, they are part of our mm-hmm. food box. Yes, yeah. Of course. Absolutely. There are, I you know, families that come from certain parts of North Africa want couscous, and other families want more rice and less flour, whatever it is. So we definitely try to defer as much as we can. But yeah, of course, things are very costly in general.
Is there more demand for groceries or your food boxes during this month?
There has been a considerable demand. Of course, there's some things that have changed at the federal level that have put impetus behind that. I would say that overall, we've been seeing an increase in demand in food. We keep a modest pantry in-house. Nobody leaves our office if they tell us they don't have food without food for that that night. And so we, with some of the changes that came down about SNAP and status since November, we have seen a significant increase in need for food. And with the economy slowing down with employment, of course, a loss of a job, even 2 weeks out of work for a lot of families really cuts into that ability to provide.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how Columbus Muslims observe Ramadan with the executive director of Muslim Family Services of Ohio, Nicole Ghazi. So there is a mandatory donation requirement for Muslims at the end of the month. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. So we have zakat, which is part of one of the pillars of faith, which is separate than that mandatory donation. Mm-hmm. And we collect both. Mm-hmm. And the point of that is that, again, I spoke earlier on, was that our obligation to those in need is a religious commandment. And so if you are a person who is eligible to give zakat, and there are eligibility requirements, there are, you have to meet a certain threshold of means to be, that this is required of you, then yes, absolutely, you share. It's sort of a like an early welfare or community welfare system where you kind of share in your blessing with others who need a little bit of help. A lot of that zakat al-fitr that is paid by the end of the month, hopefully a little bit before, goes out in the form of food for the most part. Zakat that is given, most Muslims that are required to give their zakat annually like to calculate it in Ramadan. It's sort of an annual time. We are a vessel for that. We consider that what you would call an amana or a trust. Mm. The money is not ours. Somebody is entrusting us to distribute it fairly to people who are in need. Mm. And so we discharge their obligation of zakat when they donate to us. We are a 501 organization, and we have been distributing that for several decades. But yes, that specific Eid al-Fitr amount of money is somewhat more nominal than your annual zakat requirement. But it is something that the community at large gives to share so that everybody has some blessing in the month.
Another part of your mission is cultural integration. What are some of the challenges Muslim families face, you know, maybe even especially during Ramadan, to feel like they fit in the workplace, maybe?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think especially for some of our families that grew up in a Muslim majority country, it is a little different. You know, Ramadan is not necessarily celebrated by the person in the workspace next to you.
Right.
Whereas back home, it may have been, and you are surrounded by a whole country of people celebrating the same season with you. So we definitely do try to make it special for our families. It is something that I think there is a lot more awareness in the past, you know, 25, 30 years in Central Ohio of what Ramadan means to Muslims and the sacredness of the time, not just the fact that we're fasting all day long. So I think there is a lot more awareness out there, but we do absolutely try to make it a special time for our families so that they feel that they are going to live the best of all cultures as they're making their new life here. We certainly, it's a loss, you know, when you come to a new place, there's good and bad, right? Mm-hmm. There's pluses and minuses. And so part of our program is providing Eid gifts at the end of the month. This is our 20th year of doing Eid gifts. This is not a massive, you know, adopt a family, go all out kind of big gift. It's really it's a token gift. There's a concept of Eidi or Adaya that at the end of the month, children are given a little gift in the community and at prayer time, just enough to us for a smile. Families try to buy new clothes, and that is out of reach for a lot of families that we work with. We actually collect clothes that are in new or like new condition that are appropriate for an Eid celebration. We invite our families in where they can take those for free. We try to make sure that there is a connection to the very cultures and the very traditions that many people have, but yet center that here in America and allow them to celebrate and immerse themselves fully.
And we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you, NPR recently featured two Muslim authors who published two Ramadan children's books. The books are called Ramadan for Everyone, A Muslim Community Story, and then the other one's called A Ramadan Night. And it's they wrote them so that Muslim children would feel their holiday was represented, you know, if they go to a bookstore. Sure. How do you just in a minute that we have left, how do you feel that do children also have a hard time maybe feeling like, you know, Ramadan with their peers in school and that kind of thing?
Of course. And that's because our calendar is lunar and cyclical. Mm-hmm. We can't always rely on the same season or day. So yeah. it does make it a little hard. And I think that is a challenge that we face. And I think that any time that you have early literacy opportunities, when you recognize a teacher that looks like you, when you have a book on a library shelf that speaks to your home tradition, it just speaks volumes to our children. You know, I've raised three of my own. There is a local author who has authored several children's books around the holidays. I just think, and I have donated them to local libraries when my kids were young. I just think there's so much value in diversity and in having our children grow up and see themselves in the very professions that they may aspire to one day. And reading is part of that, big part of that.
We've been talking about how Columbus Muslims observe Ramadan with the Executive Director of Muslim Family Services of Ohio, Nicole Ghazi. Thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.